Hello and welcome to the Social Media Show podcast, sponsored by Social Pilot, the social media management and scheduling tool. I'm your host, Jonathan Pollinger, and I'm a social media trainer. In each episode, you'll learn how an inspiring personality uses social media, and you'll pick up some cutting-edge techniques and top tips. You can also watch the show live at 9 a.m. on Mondays, or catch the replay on my Facebook page at facebook.com/PollingerSocial. In this episode, I chat with Andrew Davis, keynote social media speaker and trainer. Andrew has worked with KPMG, Ogilvy, Tesco, O2, Royal Mail, Virgin Media, and many other top brands. He also worked with MySpace and Friends Reunited in the days before Facebook. I hope you enjoy our chat about current and future social media trends. And if you do, please leave a review. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Social Media Show, whether you're watching live, watching the replay or listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy today's show. And a big welcome to Andrew Davis. Great to have you on the show this morning, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
Very, very welcome indeed. So like me, you're kind of very social media focused, but I don't actually know you that well, but judging from your LinkedIn profile, you've got quite a lot of sort of social media stuff going on. You're a very very busy guy, and also worked with a lot of big brands as well. And you're a well-known speaker, but perhaps for the benefit of people watching and listening, a bit of a sort of summary in terms of your exact sort of social media activities would be really interesting to hear.
Sure. Well, as I said before, thanks for having me. And I've basically been working in the digital space for 18 years now, say full-time working in digital. So originally I started in 2001, where I used to monitor chat rooms and forums for the television show Pop Idol. I don't know if you remember Pop
Idol. Oh, yeah, I do, yeah.
Will Young. So I was monitoring chat rooms and forums for them, for Liverpool Football Club. I'm not a Liverpool supporter, by the way. They paid well. I went with the money. Liverpool Football Club, Sony PlayStation, and a site called Friends Reunited. I don't know if you remember.
Ah, yes. Which was kind of like the forerunner of social networking, really, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, so. Exactly. Yeah. So that was back in 2001, 2002. So I used to moderate chat rooms and forums then. And basically then that was the only way brands could speak to their customers in that interactive way. Chat rooms, forums, and email, pretty much. So I was doing that for a year, and then my parents said, get a proper job, because working on the internet wasn't a proper job then. So I ended up at the BBC, ended up at one of their digital stations, news stations called Radio 1 Extra. And for about 4.5 years, I used to produce radio shows at the BBC, but digital radio. So internet played a very, very big part of what we were doing then. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like my first proper job working in digital content wise. But in 2006, I decided to leave the BBC to be part of the team to launch MySpace in the UK. So I don't know if you remember MySpace.
So
one of the early social networking sites. So I joined MySpace 2006. So to give you an idea, Facebook was only available to students then.
That's right.
Yeah, Twitter wasn't around. There was no Instagram. There was no, I don't even think it was 4G. I think smartphones kind of came halfway through when I was there. And when I joined, there was about 50 million people on the site. And then Rupert Murdoch bought it. And then within a year, we took it to about 250 million. But then a year later, we lost 200 million. So I kind of know what works and what doesn't. So, I do a lot of talks around why MySpace failed. Still to this day, I do a lot of talks around that.
That's interesting. I mean, that's really sort of like pioneering days back then. I mean, I thought I was sort of in at the beginning, and I was in the sense of using social media for business, because I started off sort of end 2009. But you kind of blown me out of the water there with that one, and your involvement with MySpace. So must have been sort of really, really exciting times, particularly when, you know, like you say, Facebook was sort of like kicking off, and then the growth was just absolutely massive, wasn't it, after it sort of went from students out to, well, initially it was one college, wasn't it, and then it was universities, and then it was worldwide, and then I think there was like a bit of a pause, but then there was kind of like an absolute whoosh, wasn't there? So
So when Facebook, I think Facebook came available around about September 2006 to everybody. And at the time, when it was at MySpace, our only competition was Bebo. I don't even remember Bebo.
Yes.
So, well, in the UK, in America, there was no one even close. But in the UK, it was just us and Bebo. And I would say it took about a year for Facebook to kind of come on the radar after that. There were sites like Tagged, Multiply, High Five. There was all of these sites that was kind of around, plus other ones like MSN Messenger, which was not quite the same, but it was still getting people's attention. But yeah, it was about a year, and then Facebook started kind of rearing its head. Initially, we were told, oh, don't worry about it. It's kind of boring, because Facebook was just the newsfeed, and they didn't have any of the stuff to pimp out their pages, which MySpace was kind of about. So
yeah, there was a lot of... color, wasn't there? Color, music, and like you say, you could really pimp out's the perfect word for it.
Pimp out your page. It's taught a lot of people HTML. So it was those early days, and I was there. I had a great time, to be honest. Well, I learned a lot, because I was there for the rise and I was there for the fall. So I kind of know what works and what doesn't.
So I've got to put you on the spot now, seeing as you say, sort of talk about it now. Just quickly, why did MySpace fail then? What was the...
There's so many reasons.
I know. Yeah, you probably talk on it for about an hour, but...
I'll give you three main ones. The first was... it was owned by News International. So Fox and their parent company, News Corp. And it was at that time, it was a traditional company trying to run a new media digital business. And they were trying to make, and as you know now, it doesn't, if you try to run Facebook as if you're trying to run Channel 4, it wouldn't work because the world has changed. Consumers' behaviors changed, technology's changed. So they were trying to run it as if it was an old school business.
Because they were looking at it sort of as yet another broadcast channel, and they didn't really see the interactive side of it?
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously they make money via ads, so it was, let's put an ad. This is where the eyeballs are, let's throw
everywhere,
ads.
Everywhere.
It doesn't matter if it's, obviously now we're very sophisticated with ads, but then the technology wasn't there, or the technology wasn't used. So it was just, okay, well, there's a lot of eyeballs, let's throw as much ads there. And he was getting a lot of impressions. Like in a day, you could be getting around between 30 to 36 million impressions on one page on MySpace. Whoa. So you can imagine the amount of inventory that they'll be trying to sell when it comes to ads. So it was just, that was one of the things, the interruption. The second I would say, and I often say this when I'm doing talks or training, is that because innovation is a big word at the moment. And I always say, if you're going to innovate around the edges, but keep the core business the same. Because if you look at successful companies, the Googles, the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Microsofts, they've always kept the core the same. Google's core is the ads and the search. Then they'll go into things like Maps and Google Glasses, etc. And they try and innovate around the edges. Same as Amazon. They'll have all their Kindle books, but they still keep the core, which is getting from A to Z, the same. MySpace tried to innovate everything, because all of a sudden all these new sites started coming up. And the reality is, if MySpace just kept the core the same, MySpace would be Spotify right now. Because the hardest thing about music is getting the rights from the record labels, and MySpace had that pretty much all in place. And they should have pivoted that way, but obviously hindsight is a great thing.
Fascinating stuff. That sort of brings me on to, starts to sort of make me think about Facebook a little bit, because there's quite a bit of chat about Facebook dropping the news feed and moving to a more sort of stories type format. I mean, not necessarily initially, but I think even Mark Zuckerberg's kind of like hinted at that. What do you think of that idea in light of what you've said there about the core sort of being kept the same?
I think that could potentially work purely from a mobile, because Facebook is very mobile focused now.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I still think there's a place for both. But I do, I can see why they would say that. But I personally think they should stick with both, because there's there's things that you can do for both. Because the problem with the with stories is that things go quickly. And then all of a sudden you've got a lot of large organizations. They'll say, okay, well, there's no point spending all of this money on production when it's just going to go after 24 hours.
Good point.
Assuming that we don't get towards the beginning of the news feed, of the story feed. At least if it stays in the news feed, it's searchable. It can be found if somebody's looking. So I'm not sure what will happen. I see why they say it, but I don't know whether or not that's a great idea. I think from a user point of view, I can see why, but from a business point of view, I can see a lot of businesses kind of pushing back against that.
I'd agree with that. I mean, there are pros and cons to both, aren't they? I mean, people love the sort of fast moving nature of stories and the color and the movement and the sound and all of that sort of thing. But yeah, I think from a business point of view, businesses aren't going to like it, or really anybody. You know, like as trainers, we kind of like tell people to give value a lot of the time, don't we? To get your people engaged. But like you say, if it's not searchable, then it's kind of, well, what's the point? Because you've just got that one hit within 24 hours, and nobody's ever going to sort of go back to it and find it useful. So it's an interesting contrast between the two.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's an interesting take. I think Facebook were revolutionary when they came out with the news feed, and pretty much all social networking sites followed suit. And then Snapchat, they were the ones that kind of started with the stories, and now everyone's kind of following suit. So I think the stories is kind of the next evolution of a news feed. However, I do think there's room for both.
Hmm. So looking at sort of other things that are kind of in vogue at the moment, I think, you know, we've seen quite a lot of, although this is another question for you, actually, I was going to say sort of like podcasting then. Would you sort of see podcasting as part of social media?
Yeah, I would see podcasting. Yeah, well, I would say podcasting is more content. So to give you an idea, just once I finished MySpace, so I left MySpace 2009, and for the last 10 years, I've been training, mainly training and doing keynote talks all over the world, businesses of all sizes and all industries. And what you see after a while, you start noticing similar challenges that they have, and one of them is content. So within content, that's when I would put, for example, podcasts, videos, images, text, and then they, and content is the blood of social media. I think without content there is no social media, or without content there's no internet, really. But sure. Content for me is the blood of it. So when it comes to podcasting, I would say podcasting is a very, it's like if it's a game of rugby, you've got the pitch, which will be social media, and the rugby ball is content or podcasting within that. So you can't play the game without the ball.
Yeah, get your analogy. Yeah.
So with podcasting, and I'm happy to see the growth of podcasting over the years, because when it was first being talked about, probably about 15 years ago, I remember being at the BBC and we was looking in podcasts then. The problem was music rights, because kind of people looked at podcasting and music played an important part within it. But I think because of smartphones, and because we can now download our podcasts as well as just listening to it and stream it live, and we've got better data packages, I think that's what's seen the increase of podcasts.
Absolutely,
really being I would say last year is kind of where it became very popular. This year obviously it continued, and I can see it for the next few years really being that.
It's sort of tied into the phone. I think also the fact that it fits people's lifestyles these days, that are kind of like busy and do what you want when you want kind of thing. And with the radio or the TV, you know, traditional, you have to tune in at 7 for the news or whatever, don't you? But with podcasts, it's like literally wherever and whenever you want, because chances are you've got your phone with you and you can just tune in or plug into your car or whatever. So I think that's kind of a big factor as well. So yeah,
definitely. I always say convenience wins. And that was one of the biggest, when I went from the BBC to MySpace, one of the biggest transitions was at the BBC. I had a show when I left. I had a show at 7 o'clock on, say, a Friday and a Saturday night.
Yeah.
That was like 3 hours. And if you missed it, tough. And then iPlayer came out and you could do it again for 7 days. But when I went to, so that's the broadcast model. But when I went to MySpace, it was very much, you can listen to, you can consume content whenever you want. As long as you don't break the rules, then put it out there and then people will consume content whenever they want. And that's kind of like where we are now. Radio, I have to listen when I want, when you tell me. Podcasting, okay, I've got an extra 10 minutes now, I'm going to listen to a part of it, and then, or I've got an hour here on my way to work, now I can listen to this one. And that's kind of the way the world changed, or behavior changed.
Yeah. So with all your different sort of activities, you mentioned the sort of speaking just now, what would you say you sort of enjoy doing the most? Is it the training? Is it the speaking? Do you do a bit of sort of consultancy and strategy and that sort of stuff as well?
Yes, I do consultancy, but I would say 95% is training or speaking. And I prefer training or speaking by far. I kind of like both. I like training because social media or content or digital is so much now. To try and do everything in half an hour, or like doing a talk or an hour, is quite a challenge. Could think, I can't speak about that because then people are going to ask questions about this. I have to, and then usually it becomes quite specific. Where a whole day's training or 2 days training, you can kind of go into the detail. But I do like the talks as well, just because I kind of like the challenge of saying, right, I've got an hour, and how am I going to get what I'm trying to get across in an hour? Or 90 minutes. Because I kind of, how I structure it, coming from a creative background, if I've got 90 minutes, I think to myself, this is exactly the same as a film. How can I keep people engaged like a film? Or if I'm doing a 60-minute talk, it's a television show. What can I do to keep people's attention for 60 minutes? And that was always my thought pattern when I went into doing the talks. And then when I went into training, because I used to do radio shows for 3 hours, I kind of looked at doing, okay, well, I've got two radio shows. How do I combine it? And that's 6 hour days training. So for me, structure plays a very big part, because in radio, structure is everything. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's kind of like how I created my training sessions and my talks. 10 years later, it seems to still be working. So
Excellent. A bit of a sort of slightly geeky one, I suppose, between us social media trainers. But your sort of training, is it fairly high level and strategic sort of topics, and you know, sort of tying into business objectives and stuff like that? Or do you sort of get down to the nitty gritty, as in sort of how to set up a Facebook ad and run a campaign and stuff like that?
It really depends on the client. So what
they want, sort of thing.
Yeah, so most of mine, I would say 90% of my training is in-house. So I'll have a client and they'll say, okay, well, we're looking to achieve this.
Yeah.
And then that's where I go away and create that based on their challenges, their needs, their wants, looking at the competitors, looking at the landscape. As I said, I've probably trained around about 12,000 people over the years.
Whoa.
From thousands of companies. Big number. So same things start coming up. So if I'm working with a bank, I can then go into, okay, well, I remember working with these six banks before, and these were the challenges that came up. So I can always pull from old pieces of content or experiences. And also, because of the training, because of the different industries, if I get stuck, I know people that I can speak to, I can ask quite specific questions to, and then they can come up with that. So it really depends on the client. A lot of the time it's strategy based. They say, okay, well, we need a strategy, because they might have an agency that will do the setting up the pages, or they might have a digital team that will set up the pages. They just need to know what they're doing,
what it's all about, and what they're doing.
Exactly, because what you find is a lot of clients, brands, agencies can charge a lot of money for something that doesn't cost a lot of money, but because they don't know, they have no benchmark to say, well, hold on a minute, £2,000 to set up a Twitter page, is that good or not? So, but to us, we'll be like £2,000, to you can do that in 10 minutes, if that. So That's kind of like I do a lot as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And they also, if they're doing like other services as well, like PR, then they kind of like bury it in, don't they?
So, yeah, exactly. Sort of,
quite high rates, but it's interesting to say about training. Yeah, that pretty much sort of mirrors my experience exactly. Although generally, I'm kind of like working with smaller companies than you, but it is exactly the same. And like you say, the longer you go on. In a sense, wouldn't say it gets easier, but I think you can sort of provide more. It doesn't get easier because you've got to keep constantly up to date, haven't you? But you can provide probably more value because you've got experience of that particular sector and industry.
Yeah.
And then I find there's nothing like case studies to sort of like illustrate the point, because if you can show where people have done well or failed, and also literally sort of examples, even if it's just, down to a type of post that works well, let's say, then people tend to, they can get that, can't they? They identify with it.
Yeah, definitely. It's just building comfort with the audience. So it makes them feel, okay, actually, I can do this, or I want to do this as well. And that's pretty much what I found.
Brilliant. Just 20 minutes in, I can't believe how quickly the time's gone, but just looking ahead to the sort of next sort of 12 months, let's say, where do you sort of see things developing? I mean, I think most of the predictions that people have been talking about this year have actually sort of come about. I mean, video is always a mainstay, isn't it? People always say at the start of the year, video is going to continue to grow, and it does seem to continue to grow. And then there was talk at the start of the year about private spaces versus public spaces, and I think we've probably seen that as well, haven't we? Sort of moved to messaging and groups. And I was just reading last week actually how brands are starting to use that the close friends feature on Instagram, where you can just sort of set up and send to a few particular people. So businesses are starting to use that now, so it does seem to be sort of like segmenting down. So there's a few things there I just sort of mentioned. Which of those, or any that I haven't mentioned, can you sort of see being a big thing over the next sort of 12 months?
Yeah, I think that the key things that you mentioned there is I can see pretty much over the next 12 months. Videos are not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you look at the sites like YouTube. For me, YouTube, someone said to me the other day, if there was one social media site that, if you was on a desert island and you can only have one social media site, what would it be? For me, it would be YouTube.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
I love YouTube.
Yeah.
So video is not going anywhere there. If you look at Facebook's play right now, you see more videos in the newsfeed. And purely because, Facebook will say, yes, 80%. I've heard stats like 80% of internet users will be using video by next year. Facebook, they're going to push that because they're going to make more money from ads on videos than they will on anything else. So videos is definitely not going to go anywhere. Instagram TV or IGTV, I don't know how well that will go, but I see why they done it. So videos will be there, but what you're starting to see now, videos kind of split between the high production long videos, which YouTube are trying to get because of watch time, and then the short story type videos, quick get to the point videos. I think messaging.
Just pick up on that's a good point, actually. That's something that hadn't occurred to me, but there is definitely a sort of split is the word, really, isn't there? Sort of between the short form and the long form now, which before it was all kind of one type of video, really. So
definitely. And I think with the long term, well, with both, really, it's once you've created it, it's once I click publish, then what? That's going to be, for me, I think that's probably more important than the video itself, if you want to grow as a business, and that's the promotion of it. I think video can play a big part. I think messaging, as you said, or dark social, anything in that messaging will be a big part. You're going to see more chatbots and automation around messaging. However, I do believe consumers will start to understand that.
Yeah,
and I can see there being a backlash.
They don't really like it at the moment too much, I don't think. So,
and I can see that a bit more. However, I think things like WhatsApp, I think like your group on WhatsApp, I forget that every day. So thank you very much. Some great insights there. I can see that being more. I heard that WhatsApp is going to be very customer service focused now, where go to brands and complain or ask your questions, and if they don't respond in a certain amount of time, they'll get fined. Well, the whole idea is to kind of cut down response time. So I could see messaging being a big part there.
Yeah, even just to pitch in there, I even came across a local app, quite a small company actually down here that developed in Wales, developed a directory of kind of tradespeople and local businesses. And their main method for contacting the business was WhatsApp. So there was like a WhatsApp button in the sort of app with their details. And I've not seen that before. So kind of perfectly illustrates your point there about the customer services and contact.
Yeah, definitely. I was doing some work in Kuwait a few years ago, and WhatsApp is huge out there. Like, in fact, most, like, even in Africa, well, any Kuwait, the Middle East, Africa, where they're very mobile first, WhatsApp plays a very, very big part in how they go about doing business. So I can see it more. I can see it happening more and more in the UK, just because a lot of people might not be on Facebook or Twitter and Instagram, but pretty much everybody's on WhatsApp.
So, it's a quick and easy one, isn't it? If you've got your phone number, which you have, so
easy,
it's
like not there, too much. People open the messages. Yeah. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I just hope Gary Vaynerchuk once said marketers ruin everything. And I just hope it doesn't get to that point where it's like, oh God, I'm getting spammed on WhatsApp. I'm sure it will, but hopefully not soon. I think that stories will continue.
I
think we'll see an evolution in stories. What I'm not sure, but I can see stories being like being big over the next few next year. I see a lot of people talking about AR and VR, augmented reality, virtual reality. I still think we're a long way from what people think we will see.
I agree. Just to chip in, I think it's. I always think it's a bit. Like the early stuff, at least now with Instagram, it's a bit gimmicky, don't you think, or not? What do you think?
It's gimmicky. It's
certainly okay, from a business point of view. Anyway, I mean, it's fun for people, but it's a bit gimmicky for businesses, I think.
Exactly, and I think we're a long way. We're still years away from getting it to the point where, this is really good. In computer terms, I still think we're at the Commodore 64, Spectrum, Amstrad level of computers. We're not at Xbox yet, so we're still quite away from getting to that space. The other thing as well I can see is people being a lot more platform specific. I know there was this whole let's be everywhere on social. I can see that becoming less purely because of time.
Makes sense.
It's very difficult to be able to be everywhere and manage and do it well. So I can see people focusing on one, maybe two platforms and trying to master those.
I'd echo that, because as I say, I mainly saw with small businesses and small charities, really, well, some bigger ones, but their main thing is resource. So I can see that's happening, and quite often that's my advice as well, to focus on one rather than try everything, which is what they usually doing. So absolutely, because their main you find with small businesses and charities that their main complaint is just lack of resources. So anything that you can do to make their social media activity easier is appreciated. So that focus definitely makes sense.
And I can see that happening more and more. Also, I can see people trying to stay away from black hat methods. So if the audience, if you don't know what black hat is, it's kind of doing everything illegally in the internet world. So it's almost like the get rich
cheating scheme
online. I can see, because the people's behaviors change, technology, the platforms are coming a lot smarter. I can see people just saying, you know what, let's stay away from that and try and be as not necessarily whiter than white, but I can see it being like, okay, let's try and do everything as much to the rules as possible, but we'll have to bend it in some situations purely because everyone else is. It's almost impossible not to, but not necessarily breaking the rules, but just kind of bending the rules slightly. And I can see that happening more.
Brilliant, thanks for that. So just two final questions then. If you were to give us a tip, one sort of good tip to somebody young wanting to enter our business, really, social media business, become a social media professional, what would your advice be to them?
I guess it would be to what wins on social media now is consistency and patience. And like I said, I've been here from the beginning. I've seen it all. And I think right now we're just in this space where if I can find a platform, one or two platforms, and I can post consistently. Consistently doesn't mean daily because it depends on the platform, but consistent enough that people recognize that you post all the time. But more importantly,
the awareness,
platforms, know that as well. I think that plays a big part. Let's say, for example, you decide to go for Instagram, you might want to post 2-3 times a day, and that could be it. And then also use stories. And if you could just do that consistently and then be a bit more strategic, i.e. understand how hashtags work, try and find very popular hashtags. So Instagram knows roughly the type of direction you're going into, but also hashtags which are small, that there's enough search for you to get volume if you go on the trending pages, because that's what you want to be able to do. Yeah. And those trending pages, which then leads to other people finding you. Because the reality is online, once you click publish, there's only three ways people are going to find you, and they're either going to search you, somebody shared it, or they found it by accident. And then outside of that, you're advertising. So you need to be able to look at that and be a bit more strategic. So be consistent with your content, know how people are going to find you, and then be patient. Because the reality is, I often say to people, if you go viral today and you're not ready for it, you're always going to be chasing that viral status. And then you might have success in another day, but because you're used to this now, you're loving it's like being a one-hit wonder in music. It's like your first song is a hit, and now you're all constantly trying to chase that hit. But you're not ready. You were not ready properly for when it, like, to capitalize on it. And that's the key thing. That's why I say consistency, patience. So when you do go viral, or when it does success come, you're in a position to capitalize on it. That for me is the foundation of everything. And sorry, the reason why I say that is because this social media stuff is simple. It's not easy, but it is simple. And the reason why I say it's simple is because you've got 15-year-old kids that are millionaires doing this. There's I think last year, a 7-year-old kid was on YouTube, made like 24 million.
Yeah, I read about that.
So you've got people that's not even finished high school that are achieving results that, like, financially, they don't have to work again for the rest of their lives, or they've got awareness that the BBC would love. So, and they've not even finished high school, let alone got a master's degree. Ultimately, as businesses and business owners or anybody, business professionals, we're not trying to create Google's algorithm. We're just trying to create content, promote that content, and ideally convert that content. And that's the simplicity of it. And that's the key thing. Get those fundamental foundations in place.
Fantastic. Great advice. And finally, if you were able to go for a coffee and a chat with any living person, who would that be and why? It's a question I ask all my guests.
Yeah. I would say it would it would probably be somebody like Jay-Z.
Good choice. Interesting.
One, because right now he's in a spot above, and I'd like to find out a bit more why. As a businessman, I admire him. I love my hip hop. As a hip hop artist, I admire him. I remember back in MySpace, he even had a lyric, and it goes, "I'm not on the internet. I've never been on MySpace," because he really was against it. But then obviously he decided that. The internet's obviously the place to be now,
and
that's my title, etc., and invested in other places as well, I believe. So it'd probably be him, just kind Good of choice. Find out a bit more and get advice from him, and that'll probably be right now Jay-Z.
Fantastic. So that's it for the show. Thank you so much for being on, Andrew. It's been a fantastic chat. Really enjoyed that. I hope our viewers and listeners did too. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot.